Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you listening right now. Hi, thanks to you. Maybe you're Tony Glass or Peter Bohack or Philip Less or new patrons. Everybody welcome Eric and W.
Eric W, you're the best.
On this episode of DTNS, Sony backs off from forcing PC gamers to log into PlayStation Network, all the credible Monday rumors, both Apple and Android, and should you be allowed to recreate dead loved ones in AI? This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, May 6th, 2024 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
From deep in the heart of Texas, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chen.
Oh, it's a spooky show. We're gonna resurrect the dead later on, Justin.
Revenge of the Sixth.
Ah, yes. Oh. The Sixth. There we go. All right, perfect. Let's start. By the way, I found out my barber is a huge Star Wars fan, and I liked him already, but now I'm never having another barber. Like, just wall-to-wall Star Wars when I went to get my haircut on May the 4th.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, let's start with the quick hits. Been a lot of confusion over whether Jack Dorsey owns microblog Blue Sky. Blue Sky was spun out of Twitter as a project to create an open protocol for microblogging that was done back when Dorsey was CEO. Dorsey does not own Blue Sky. He was on its board and had an interest in it, and now we know he's not on the board. During a conversation on X about funding for open protocols, someone named J.G. Lipt asked Dorsey if he was still on the Blue Sky board, and Dorsey said no. That's all he said was no. So Sunday afternoon, Blue Sky published a statement thanking Dorsey for his help starting Blue Sky and announced, well, I guess we're looking for a new board member to take his place. Who, you in, Justin? You want to join?
Check it out. I'll pass. YouTube moved its jump ahead feature from selected testing to being a feature for all YouTube premium subscribers. Jump ahead uses some machine learning and user data to predict to which parts of a video you are most likely to enjoy and skip to those parts. You can access by opting into the experiment on the Android app in the United States, and it works on all English language videos. When it's available, you'll see a map ahead button. When you double tap it, you'll skip forward. The feature is still experimental, so YouTube said it will only be available until June 1st, after which it will decide whether or not to make it permanent or to experiment further.
I didn't get it yet. I tried it on my Pixel, and it did not show up yet, so I can't wait to try it. I probably like a top 10 list a little too much, so you know, stop me if you've already heard this stuff, but Counterpoint issued its estimates for the top-selling phone models in Q1, and I'm always fascinated to see who's on top. Apple. Apple is on top with the iPhone 15 Pro Max, iPhone 15, 15 Pro, and iPhone 14 taking the top four slots in that order. Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra, followed by the mid-range A15 5G, rounded out the top six. Now, that's actually not much of a change from this time last year when three iPhone 14s and the iPhone 13 had the top four slots, and the A13 was outselling the S23 Ultra for places 5 and 6, but otherwise Samsung had the 5th and 6th slots a year ago as well. The entire top 10 is made up of phones from Apple and Samsung. Nobody else cracked into the top 10 worldwide. Counterpoint notes the continuing trend for customers to hold on to their phones longer and then buy the highest-end phone when they do replace it.
The information sources say that Microsoft is training its own large language model that could compete with OpenAI's GPT-4. Supposedly, it is called MAI-1, and it is one of the things that DeepMind co-founder Mustafa Suleiman was brought on to run when he was made CEO of Microsoft AI. The information says it will have around 500 billion parameters, making it far larger than Microsoft's previous in-house models.
And while we're talking about models, Hugging Face announced L-E-Robot, an open source toolkit for AI robotics. So it includes code for sharing, visualizing data, training models. There are some pre-trained models as well if you want to get started. Also integrates with physics simulators, so you don't need to have hardware to start working on it. When you do want to put it in hardware, it can handle a wide range of robotics from a single robotic arm all the way up to a sophisticated humanoid. If you want to take a look, you can find the code on GitHub, and there's a free Discord server where you can talk to other folks who are working with it as well. Hugging Face brought over Remy Cadin from Tesla earlier this year to lead an open source robotics project. And this is one of the first big things we've heard from it since he joined. Sony's Helldivers 2 has become the company's most successful game on PC. And Sony and Arrowhead Games had always planned to require a PlayStation Network login to play the game on PC, but they didn't enforce that during the launch because they just wanted people to start playing it. They were too excited. Well, last week, it announced that PlayStation Network accounts would soon be mandatory in order to help it combat bad behavior in the game. New players would be required starting Monday, May 6th, and existing players would need to get a PSN login if they didn't have one already by May 30th, or they wouldn't be able to play the game anymore. Now, some didn't like the idea of having to get a Sony ID, but some didn't have the option in their country. Enough people began requesting a refund on Steam that Valve delisted the game in 177 countries while it worked through all the requests. So late Sunday, PlayStation posted on X that it had decided not to move forward with the requirement after all. And Arrowhead Games CEO Johan Pihlsted said it was his decision to launch without the account linking and that the companies should have talked about it more so players were expecting it. Taking responsibility for it, even though, Roger, you were playing it and you said, like, it did tell you when you started the game that you would eventually need a PlayStation login.
I mean, it was a notice. And when you buy the game, it actually says it's a requirement, like, yeah, to have a PSN account. So it's not like it's completely out of the blue. I can understand the frustration because when I started, I realized, like, it required one, but it didn't really nag me about logging in. And so you could play it, and I played it for like, you know, a couple hours without the PSN login. But I do think it is. I think there's a level of inconvenience to it. Some people don't want to sign up. I already have a PSN account, so it's not a big deal for me. But I can see people thinking, well, I've already signed up for this Steam or whatever platform, and now I have to sign into yet another account. EA did this for a while for some of their games. You had to log in after logging into Steam, and you bought the game. You have to log into Origin, and EA kind of ditched Origin, and they kind of smooth that entire process, so you don't really have any other road bumps or speed bumps to getting the game up and running once you buy it.
So, Roger, does any other game of this magnitude have this practice?
They used to, and a lot of PC gamers found it to be very, very annoying. I'm not sure if Ubisoft still does it, but they had their own version where you had to log in. And again with EA, and the problem is everyone found it to be a little obnoxious, because one, you're already tracking me, but like, what's the point? I mean, I already bought the game legitimately. Is there something about me logging into your
service?
We're
not talking about multiplayer gaming, right? Yeah. We're saying just to play single player, you had to log in, which is, I think, what rubs people the wrong way. They're like, I'm playing it on my machine. Why do you need to know about it?
Yeah, why do you need to know about it? And really, there's no other benefit to it because I already get all the DLCs through Steam because I paid for them. So the other than just tracking you and having yet one other thing running on your PC when you're playing.
And there is no proprietary benefit that the PSN network could offer you for the sign-in.
Not as of right now. I mean, they could offer something.
So this is just another step that requires opening up another app, and that is why gamers, a famously rough and tumble, unbotherable group, have reacted en masse, because the noise around this one was really, really loud.
Yeah.
It's the way I liken it, it's like you paid for something with a credit card, but then when you take your purchase out the door, you have to show your ID to prove that you're the person that bought
it. Like Costco.
It's just, except with Costco, it's a membership card, and they kind of tell you beforehand.
They check the receipt, and they count it up.
I think there would have been uproar had they required this from – had they enforced the requirement from the beginning. It got extra amplified because they took something away. You never give people something, even if you say you're going to take it away later. You never give people something and take it away and expect people to be okay with that. And they should have been nagging you on the nag screen every time you launch the game if that's what they really wanted to do, but they didn't want to get negative attention. And so you end up with this. It's just an example of it is much harder to take things away from customers than it is to give something to customers. So they probably, if they were going to do this, should have done it right from the beginning,
not do it at all, or do it consistently, because there are other PlayStation games on Steam that do not require that PSN login. So
and
it's
a Disturbed Angel is pointing out they were selling it in regions where you can't even make a PlayStation Network account. Obviously, they had a plan to get around that. In fact, Pylestat from Arrowhead was saying that on Sunday, like, we're going to figure out a way around that. Don't worry about it. So they didn't need to do this. They just wanted to do it.
Yeah, it seems like poor planning.
Yeah, I think this is all going to be moot because you're going to have to log in to play cloud gaming at some point in the future anyway. But you know what? That's probably still 10 years away at this point.
That's tomorrow's dive into
exactly. Lots of leaks and credible rumors out there today. So I thought we'd bundle them all up into one package. Three apples and an Android chaser. What do you say?
Let's go.
Let's start with Haitong International Securities Analyst Jeff Pugh, who has been getting a reliable reputation. So we're going to put that to the test. Pugh says the iPhone 17, not the 16, which comes out later this year, but the 17, which is what we're calling the one that'll come out next year in 2025. The iPhone 17 will no longer include the iPhone Plus as an option. That's the non-pro with the big screen. Instead, you'll have the iPhone Slim. Now, that's pretty much just a different name for the same thing. It'll still apparently be, according to Pugh, a 6.6-inch display, but thinner, hence the name, iPhone Slim. And maybe it'll wear a little cowboy hat.
Yeah, or the real version of it should please stand up. Pugh also says that Apple is planning mass production for a 20.3-inch foldable device in 2025 and a foldable phone in 2026. This backs up Ming-Chi Kuo's report that Apple is working on a 20.3-inch foldable, although Kuo put that as coming out in 2027. Pugh says it's 2025. So bookmark this one, DTNS heads.
Mm-hmm.
Bloomberg's Mark Gurman has also said that Apple is looking for a foldable Mac iPad hybrid. So how will we remember this? Who says slim and foldable iPad in 2025 and foldable phones in 2026?
Yeah, we need a rhyming mnemonic for this. Please send it to us. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. I hope someone will remind us in 2025 and or whenever there's a foldable coming from Apple, whichever comes first, to check in on this and see how close these folks got. I do think all of this means, especially because Gurman and Kuo are in the conversation, that Apple is working on a foldable and we're going to see it within the next 2 years.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, that is that book that.
Yeah.
Now, where we are in the production cycle and how close they are to shipping, who knows?
Yeah. And these things are always like, at the moment, the plan is, right? So yes. They could all be right. When Quo said it was 2027, that might have been the plan. Then maybe they, you know, were like, oh, we can do this earlier. And that's what Pooh is reporting. So who knows? The last of the three Apple rumors is that Tuesday, 10 a.m. Eastern announcement from Apple will only go 35 minutes.
Woo.
This is music to my ear, especially because it's at 7 a.m. Like, that's before we even really start prep for DTNS. Thank you, Apple, for moving it earlier. And thank you in advance for making it only 35 minutes. It also implies that this is just going to be iPads and we're not going to get a bunch of surprise announcements.
Yeah, you're going to get that A block written before breakfast. This is possibly hour working.
I don't know why they're doing it at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific.
Markets?
Markets open at 9 Eastern, though. Like,
yeah, but that's
earlier in the day to hit the market. I don't know.
And then all of a sudden, you're in the middle of Squawk Box Steve Kovacs on there talking about how Apple's got a new foldable iPad.
But it's only 35 minutes if you did it the normal 10 a.m. I don't know.
I guess that just feels it's more like a press release. They're going to walk out there. They're going to say, hey, look, here are the new iPads. They can do ding dong and flip flop. They are a step up. X, Y, or Z, get ready, perfect for dads and grads.
You know available. What? That might be the new Apple pattern, is when we have a big announcement, we'll do it at 10 a.m. Pacific. When we have a short announcement, like the Max that they did at 5 p.m. last fall, then they're either going to do early or late, one or the other. Maybe.
All right, let's get out of Cupertino. We got an Android chaser here for you. 9to5 Google says that a new tweak in the Google Maps interface has been spotted server-side and may be in testing for some Android users. It uses sheets instead of a full screen for more functions, so you don't lose the map when you look at details for points of interest.
I like this. I don't know. Do you use Google Maps still much?
I use it all the time. In fact... I've fallen into the habit of using Apple Maps for driving because I like their interface in CarPlay a little bit better.
Okay.
But whenever I need to actually know something about where I'm going or I want to actually look for things in an area, it's Google or bust, baby.
Yeah, I use Google Maps for looking things up. Where is it? How long is it going to take to get there? What neighborhood is it in? What else is around there? All of that. When I'm driving, I tend to still use Waze, honestly. Unless it's a place where I'm not worried about traffic or time, then I might use Apple because I like their lane guidance. Although Waze just started doing similar lane guidance, so that advantage is starting to go away. But Google is definitely my informational thing. So this is supposed to make it easier when you're navigating to look up a card and not lose your map. I don't really do that when I'm navigating so much as when I'm searching, but it's still nice to be like, yeah, the map's right there. It's much faster to just tap it and get back to it than having to X out and go to a whole new screen. So I think this is a good change.
There have been a lot of very puzzling UI changes or puzzling UI decisions rather with Google Maps, specifically in just the idea of bringing up that entire card. As opposed to, I think, the three or four most relevant things I want to see right there, which is like, is this the place I think it is? Is it open? Like, what are the hours? Like, it's pretty good.
Yeah. And I started to rely on the Google rankings, the user ratings a little more than I used to just ignore them. But now if there's enough of them, I'll even take that into account. So,
yeah, I don't know where we are. Just if we're going to look at the big scale of anything that is written on the internet, you know, I think we've moved into a place of them becoming so important they became less reliable.
Yeah,
because if they were gameable, then people were going to take them extraordinarily seriously because it was their online reputation. And now we're in an AI world, who knows? Who knows what anything is at the end of the day?
We're not even here. No. If you have feedback about anything that gets brought up on the show, like that comment I just made, get in touch with us on social networks. You know you love them. You can't stop looking at them. Stop doom scrolling and at Reply DTNS Show on X or Mastodon. We are at DTNS Show at mstdn.social. We're also Daily Tech News Show on TikTok and DTNS Picks, DTNS PIX on Instagram and Threads.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This is an interesting one. A lot of press today. You are going to see this on your local news, possibly. An app called Vera AI, V-E-R-A, which, by the way, by the time your local news does it tonight, it might not even be an issue anymore because it seems like it got yanked. But let me tell you what it is. It's the latest, not the first, and certainly not going to be the last, to promise to make a virtual representation of, quote, someone you miss. The marketing is clearly aimed at people who want to talk to a dead loved one. So a grandparent or parent who's passed away, or a wife, possibly, or husband. The app description at one point read, whether you've lost a dear one or you simply want to get closer to someone you don't see often enough, Vera AI is the right app for you. Recreate anybody you can think of and have real and intimate conversations with them. They did not explain how they did that. They did say that it would ask for access to your local files and photos, so presumably that's part of it. However, you can't find it anymore. Not only did it get removed from the Play Store in a lot of markets, including Canada and the US, but when I went to the web, it just says not found. It's not even there. The support email for the app belongs to Bending Spoons, which offers a bunch of photo editing apps. They did a COVID app for Italy. They also are the ones who bought Evernote, if you've heard of them that way. But they were sort of, not, I don't know if hiding is too strong a word, but they weren't putting it out there that they were the ones behind this. Vera AI, I think, is gone. I think the outcry and all the writing up about it means that Google has just yanked it from the store for whatever reason. Maybe they weren't properly disclosing what they were doing. But, Justin, it's not going to be the last one to do this, right?
They weren't the first.
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of puzzled why this has gotten the reaction that it has today, where we're just kind of reacting to a thing that not only isn't novel, it's very obviously going to be in our lives. The ability for AI to recreate writing is inevitably going to lead to some people wanting it to be trained on any number of people, up to and including historical figures, some of your favorite writers, and yes, grandma or grandpa or your aunt or your uncle or your ex-girlfriend, whoever you would like to talk to that now you do not have the ability to talk to. AI will try to fill that void if you want to do it. And if we're specifically going to be in the world of dead loved ones, I don't really understand the reaction of people saying, ooh, gross to it. People grieve in all sorts of different ways, and this doesn't seem like something that would be intensely bizarre unless you want to graft some other gigantic narrative on top of it.
Yeah, that was one of the interesting things to me, is the problem with this is the anybody you can think of, right? And the idea of creating a virtual representation of a person without their approval when they're alive, right? We've seen issues with that. I could see that be grounds for removing them from the Play Store, but that doesn't seem to be what any of these folks are writing about in the stories about it. It's all about the, ooh, weird, resurrecting people who are passed away. I don't like that. So maybe it's just a combo where people understand that there's a risk for living people and they're put off by the idea of creating virtual representations of people who are no longer with us. But I'll put those in two separate buckets. Like, I think there needs to be a lot of work done on, you know, what do we do to safeguard all of us being, you know, recreated by someone without our permission. And there's talk and laws and things being discussed around there. And there's a separate conversation of, is it okay for Justin to, you know, recreate someone who has passed away who he misses? And could that be healthy? Is it something that helps the grieving process?
Or just, is it novel? Is it something, you know, my grandmother and grandfather are dead. I am expecting my first child at the end of the summer. I will never get the opportunity to tell them that they have, that I'm going to be posthumously giving them a grandchild. For novelty's sake, during a Thanksgiving dinner, would it be interesting if we could train it on any of the writings that, that came from one of the two of them and I was able to tell them? And we would see what they would, what they would say. And then at Thanksgiving dinner, we could all decide whether or not that was accurate or not. Yeah, this is just a reality of where we are going with this kind of generative stuff. And if I could take one moment, Tom, and please make this about journalism.
Oh, please. Finally. At least someone with the courage to do so.
Courage and the bravery to make this about journalism. I was just really grossed out by you know, some of the coverage here. Futurism via Yahoo News, the headline, Internet horrified at AI app for cloning dead family members. The within the first three graphs, we are quoting just a random dude on a freelance medical editor on Blue Sky with the super calorically dense quote, absolutely the F word not. Cool. We know one person's mad on Blue Sky. No intellectual curiosity to see what this app is. Based on what I've seen of it, it looks like kind of junk. So I wouldn't be shocked if this is just a poorly made app and it doesn't deliver on what you would want it to. But the moral grandstanding for the sake of something between anti-tech or anti-AI, like don't let the machines do too much kind of narrative, is just I don't know who it's for. It's certainly not for people that like tech.
I was surprised that even those Blue Sky posts didn't veer off into, you know, creating me without permission and stayed kind of focused on the dearly departed. I'm more interested in having that conversation because, you know, my mom died just about a year ago now. I don't want to do that for this. And I'd be interested if I had a counselor who said, you know what, you're resisting that, but you should, right? If this was a tool that could be prescribed, so to speak, not with a prescription, but, you know, like recommended. I, on the other hand, my dad passed away in 2004. There's enough distance there where I'm like, you know what? Actually, it might be kind of fun. But then I worry, like, would I get too attached? And is that uncomfortable? And that would that be a problem? Would I get addicted to it somehow? So I'd like some work to be done to give me guidance. Again, don't forbid me from doing it, but say, like, hey, these are things to watch out for when you use it to make sure that it doesn't get out of hand. I think that is a healthier way to approach this than like just ban it. Don't let it happen. I'm mostly interested in recreating people I never met. My grandpa died in the 50s. I never got to speak to him. If I could, you know, pull together enough of his writing and pictures and stuff to have a conversation, that would be really interesting. That's where you start talking about historical figures and things like that.
Well, that's already happening.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there are already things where you can have a conversation with various different historical figures. You could do that right now on most of the language models that are publicly available and popular. You can just say you are now blank and that'll go forward. I do think that we're going to see more of that. Whether or not it is explicitly said to be that is something you know, that I think right now we're focusing on the crudest possible element of it. The idea of a product introducing itself as resurrect your dead loved ones. That's probably the crudest way we could refer to it. And some people will go for it because that's where they want to be in the grieving process. But what I think is more likely is, you know, your father died in the 2000s. You have got enough a distance from it. If there was just an ability for somebody that to text you about the Cardinals, right? And maybe you know that it, wow, this guy reminds me of my dad, or it is your dad. There's a million different things that I think are palatable than, can I please speak to the beyond?
Well, Jahander has it. Like, I have questions about how authentic it would feel, right? Like, would it really replicate, in Jahander's case, their grandfather, not just a grandfather? So that's one thing. And then Paul would like it to combine pictures of or audio of Fred Rogers with video and pictures of their dog, so they could get aphorisms.
Everything is possible. Jahander, all I will say is this. I assume that it would be closer than you would expect, that these kinds of things are pretty good at that, because the secret sauce is our brains connect a lot of dots that may or may not be there.
And I'm going to bring it up for the third time, because I think it's the most concerning part of this is people misusing it to make virtual representations of living people without their permission. Like, if you're going to be upset at something, that is the thing I am most understanding of you being upset with. And that's one that does need to be dealt with for sure, because that's going to happen. And we need to figure out how we as a society are going to deal with that. All right, let's check out the mailbag. If you've been curious about getting a 3D camera for your next vacation, Chris Christensen has a hands-on review with the Insta 360 X3.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. The other device that I took with me to Morocco that I truly loved was sent to me from Insta 360, and it's an Insta 360 X3 camera. This is a 3D camera. You put it on a selfie stick. You walk down the middle of a Medina with this out in front of you. You look like a dork, but you get, say, 20 seconds of video. And then later on, either in your camera or on your laptop, you can choose to export that video in different ways, in horizontal, in vertical, export it as 360. And you can choose where you want to look if you're going to export it, not as 360, but as flat. So you basically shoot the video and then later on play the role of the editor, choosing whether you're looking behind you, whether you're showing yourself as you're walking down the street, and it will take the selfie stick out of your hand magically, or whether you're looking in front. Very interesting device. Glad I had it. That's the Insta 360 X3, and this is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Ah, and you know, so many people carry selfie sticks, they're already immune to looking like a dork, so this isn't going to change it much if you're already doing that, right? Thank you, Chris Christensen, and thank you, Justin Robert Young. What do you got going on these days?
May 24th, our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., myself, Andrew Heaton, and Jen Briney, the collective known as We're Not Wrong, will hold our first ever live show in Washington, D.C. Guys, I came on here last Thursday and I said we had a handful of tickets left. I am here to tell you, we got two. You and a friend. Are you the district denizens that will be at our show? One opportunity for you to come see us. Head on over to Eventbrite. Search for We're Not Wrong, Washington, D.C., May 24th, Anacostia Arts Center. We'll see you there.
No better way to celebrate the founding of Jamestown in 1607 on May 24th than to go see that show. Patrons, stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet. Is TikTok making Gen Z feel poor when they're not? Or at least not as poor as TikTok is making them feel? Wall Street Journal has an interesting article on that. Plus, we might have a little update on how AI has been playing a part in the Kendrick Lamar Drake beef. You can also catch the show live Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Back tomorrow covering the Apple iPad, we think, announcement with Terrence Gaines and Nika Monfort joining us. Talk to you then.
The DTNS family of podcasts, helping each other understand.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program. Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.